You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters Live.
Welcome to the Table Talk podcast. I'm Stephen Gates. I'm a writer and broadcaster specialising in food and science. In this episode, produced in partnership with GS1 UK, we're going to explore the way that data use is being transformed to improve the customer experience. Now, what does that mean? Well, technology has changed the retail landscape. Shoppers have become more demanding. They expect rich, accurate data on everything that they purchase, from the provenance of it to allergens, packaging, composition to calorie counts, and frankly, everything in between. But they expect the same simplicity, seamlessness, and speed from the grocery sector that they get from other apps that they use, from services and sectors. Now, this puts pressure on the retail industry to keep up with consumer demands by continuing to innovate to provide shoppers with the best possible shopping experience. And that's what we're going to discuss. Now, I'm joined by a stellar panel from the very top of the industry. We have Richard Sadler, the Customer Director at Unilever.
Hello.
We've got Dan Sands, Head of Brand Engagement at GS1 UK.
Hi.
And Paul Sumner, Program Manager at Tesco.
Hello.
So welcome to all of you. Now, let's just go straight in there. What are the challenges that manufacturers and retailers face in this evolving customer-centric landscape?
Well, maybe I can kick off there, Steph. It's Richard here. One of the things we're really working with is the fact that consumers are demanding ever more information, and their whole shopper journey has fundamentally changed in recent years. Not just in terms of where they're shopping, but how they're shopping. Even shopping that happens in store now has an online and research element. I was having a look at some recent stats from the Food Marketing Institute, and they concluded that 84% of shoppers use their devices to help them shop in the store. And they're demanding an ever greater range of information. For example, when they look for a mayonnaise, as well as wanting to know the ingredients and the nutritional content, like calories and so on, they also want to know where the eggs in the mayonnaise are from. We make Hellmann's mayonnaise, and all our eggs in Hellmann's mayonnaise are free-range eggs, and that is something which consumers are asking about, and we need to tell them.
So they're wandering around the store on their phones, you know, searching for stuff online, and I guess what the problem is what's the quality of that information that they're getting?
That's right, and you know, they want to make sure that that can be answered quickly, because they're in the moment, in that shopping moment, and you know, the range of information they're asking for could be from the ingredients to almost, what about the packaging? How sustainable is that product? Take for example the whole host of news at the moment around plastic, following the Blue Planet documentaries last year, and that is just an ongoing theme that's on shoppers' minds. A recent study I saw from NMI showed that 91% of UK consumers actively choose to buy recycled products. Example we've got is the topic of wipes. You know, be that bathroom wipes or baby wipes or facial wipes used to remove makeup. Consumers want to know, you know, what happens to those wipes after they've been used. Are they biodegradable? That is something which they want to know. And the result of that is that a lot of manufacturers now are launching biodegradable wipes. I mean, that's something what people are looking for. Our brand Simple, we've just launched Simple biodegradable wipes in the facial wipes area. So these are issues that are really important to people, they really matter. And as an industry, we need to be able to provide that information at the point they want it. So that is the key challenge.
I was gonna say, it's easy to underestimate our complete obsession with product data and kind of take it for granted and the impact that has on industries. I mean, if you think about going for running is really, really big, not for myself, but my wife runs, and you used to just go for a run, but now you go for a run with an app and you're looking for your heart rate, distance covered, average speed, how many calories I've burned, the obsession for data that we have. And I think, you know, certainly in grocery retail, it's no different, right? You don't just buy a sandwich anymore. You buy a sandwich and you're looking for the calorie count. Like you mentioned, is the mayonnaise in the sandwich used with free range eggs? Is it organic? And I know you mentioned some of the stats there on consumers, and it's growing. We see it more and more. 87% of consumers I've heard say that accurate and rich content is important when they're buying or making their buying choices. And they say they will switch brands for brands that offer that kind of more rich and more engaging product information. And we know, obviously, GS1 working with brands and retailers, that we know that it's important, but the data is out there, but we know that retailers don't trust the information or the data that they're getting, because it's coming from multiple data sources. If you think about the vast number of manufacturers that they work with, and they're all using their own different processes to get that data in, that actually for retailers to trust that data can be quite tricky. And therefore, if you can't trust the data, you've either got to validate it yourself, which add costs into the supply chain, or not use the data. And obviously, there's only so many processes you can put in place to validate the data. And as you mentioned, with the kind of exponential growth in data demands from consumers, it's not sustainable for every retailer to keep validating every new bit of information that comes in. I think trust is a real big challenge within the industry.
And Paul, I mean, with this much sort of demand for data, there's also only so much room on the packaging to give information, isn't there?
There is, you're right. The packaging, though, however, isn't the only form of communication, I guess, from a customer point of view. We've demanded mobile, online. We've got a lot more avenues now which we can share that information with the customers. But if you don't mind, I just want to build on the previous points. I think a couple of things have been pointed out. It's very clear that there's an ever-increasing demand for more and more information about the products the customers are buying. I think the reason a customer's choosing a product is no longer solely focused on the price of that product. Obviously, this is a key factor, but increasingly customers are telling us they want to know more and more about the products they buy. Dan's touched on it there, as is Richard, but the reasons why I choose to buy a product may include, is the product suitable for my dietary requirements? Were the ingredients in the product to source from, through to the sustainability and recyclability of that product's packaging even? I think these are increasingly becoming factors of why I choose certain products to buy, but also where I decide to shop and buy that product itself. I think on top of this, as a retailer, we face increasing volume of legislative changes. These add constant pressures, I think, for changes to the data we need to collect and share about the products that we sell. I think over the years, regulation changes, including Food Industry 1169, these have all changed the data we need to collect and display about the products. Our ability to adapt to this has been difficult, I think, often, and coordinating it and ensuring adherence has been quite a challenge for us, I think, over the years. But I just wanted to say the increase in data itself doesn't really create the biggest challenge. I think the insurance of, and I think Dan touched on it in terms of trust, but consistency of the data, timeliness of the data, the accurate data set, I think that builds the trust and creates the opportunity for us, I think, more so. And I think suppliers need to be clear the expectations from a retailer in terms of data. We as retailers need to be able to believe in the data that we're going to receive. But ultimately, our customers need to know that they can trust what they're seeing about the products when they choose to buy a product.
So Dan, is that what you're saying, that this is what retailers really need overall? It's like trust and love, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's trust. It's trust in product data. Like I say, if you can't trust it, you can't show it, right? It's due diligence from a retailer. And Paul mentioned, you know, it's not just about trust and wanting to show it to consumers, but Paul mentioned legislative changes coming in, and we saw the kind of GDA, so on packaging, the red, amber, good for your health, bad for your health, on the fat content, salt content, came in, I think it was around 2013. And then Paul mentioned EU 1169, which is about allergens, bold on pack, right? And that was a legislative change, which was, I think, the year after 2014. So suddenly the manufacturers have got to change all their packaging and therefore change the information that they've sent to the retailer. Retailers got to digest that information, and it's only going to keep growing, right? We know that in Scotland, they've got deposit return schemes coming into play in 2001. So once again, it's additional information that a brand will have to provide either a retailer or a third party who operates these deposit return machines. So for your bottles, when you take them back to the supermarket, you put it in and you get your refund of the deposit you put forward. So legislative changes are massive. And you would think, maybe, why is it so onerous on brands just to provide additional information? But you know, you've got to think that actually, if it's one product, yeah, fair enough. But actually, if you're looking at tens, hundreds, or in Unilever's case, thousands of products that they're pushing through, and you factor in the amendments, so the changes to product information, and you factor in the number of retailers that they're having to send that information to, and every retailer's asking you for in a slightly different way or different language, different system they have to log into to actually give that information to the retailer. It's all multiple data touch points.
Right? Ooh, you're giving me a headache just talking about it, frankly.
And that's the point, right?
Right. Okay. So before the view, before the listeners all just disappear from sheer stress, what are the retailers, manufacturers, and the industry as a whole doing to tackle these challenges?
Yeah. So I think the important thing is that we got together. You couldn't tackle a problem like this on its own. And if we look at other countries, do this far greater than the UK does. So Sweden, Canada, they're all looking at product data as a whole. So your trading data, so your logistical data, but also your e-commerce, your customer-facing data, treating it as one thing. So it was looking at how we can get together to build a solution that combines the two, and we can all speak in one language, one process, and with trust about the data.
And what is that project?
So the project itself is called Product DNA. So it's an industry-built platform. So built on an industry data model. So all the retailers and the brands got together, which was, I think you'll agree, guys, quite a challenge. And we looked at the information that was needed.
There's a little gasp of pain from everybody, because I can imagine that must be an enormous task to bring together these vast companies with lots of requirements to share data and to standardize them.
Yeah, I mean, these are guys that are used to competing on the shelf, right? So it's the competitive edge is their nature and what they're used to. But to come together for a common purpose, right? That benefits everyone, but ultimately it benefits the consumer, right? So I think, you know, a big achievement and has lots of potential for it.
Richard, what do you think the impact of Product DNA is? How do you see it working here in comparison to other markets?
Yeah, I mean, look, we're continuously working hard behind the scenes to get our data and branded content organized in a way which we're able to share it with customers like Tesco in whatever channel they need. You know, in the digital world we live in, that means we need to think differently about how we do it. You know, for example, even a sort of simple product image needs to be created in a way which works for a big out-of-home billboard that you might see when you're out and about, to an image on a mobile phone on a very small screen which people only want to spend a moment looking at. So that's the challenge we've got, which both us and our retail partners have. And it's funny, in one of my previous roles, I was part of a team that rolled out a new global data synchronization system, or GDS as it's commonly known in the industry, across Europe. And that was the accepted route of doing it across many European countries and also the States and Australia. But when the trouble with that is that it was kind of limited in the amount of information that they were to put through that system. And also it was very IT heavy. Which meant, you know, when it came to applying that in the UK market, we never got around to doing it as a total industry. So as a result, we've all been sort of working independently and doing what needs to be done. But it means we're all working incredibly hard and spending a lot of time doing it, and probably not spending enough time thinking about what consumers really want from that information. We're spending a lot of our time actually just trying to pull the information together itself into a format which, you know, does the job. So, you know, we've reached a kind of inflection point, a tipping point, where we needed a sort of fundamental structural change. And that, you know, the onset of Product DNA is sort of given us that opportunity.
I think one thing you said, Richard, that I found interesting is the previous solution, so the global synchronization network, like you said, very, very IT heavy, right? And for any solution to be industry-wide, it has to be available to, you know, the guy who's developed a product in his shed, and he's got it all the way, and he's now taking it to a retailer, all the way up to multinationals that do have these big IT infrastructures. So from if we look at the retail and new line forms, you can log on and you can type in the information into their portal. So Product DNA needed to offer that ability, so it was available to all. Because ultimately, and you know, I was speaking to a retailer last week and speaking to some of their buyers, and they said they have a challenge in getting some of these kind of new brands and coming into the market and getting them to trade with this particular retailer, because the cost to enter market is so high, because you've got third parties providing services that you need to get your data to retailers. And if you want search engine optimization, actually, to get your product higher up there, then that's going to cost you some money. So I think what was really important is to make it industry available.
Yeah.
And that was crucial, especially coming from a member organization as we do.
Yeah, and standardization is a really important part of this as well, isn't it? I mean, Paul, Tesco's obviously, you know, all retailers collect data. What is Tesco's experience with collecting data and then using it, and how's this transformed?
Well, I think we've been working hard in Tesco to transform the way we work, particularly in the last couple of years, in many aspects, not least the way we collect the data about our products. I think we spent a lot of time, effort, and create new ways of working, new tools, new technology, etc., to support how we collect and validate data. But I think what's very clear from the initial work we did with GS1 in this space was that the issues we face are not uncommon. And whether you're a retailer or a supplier, we've unintentionally all made it more and more complicated to share the data we've got about the products we sell. I believe actually now, for the work that we're talking about now, the work that Dan's explained and Rich has explained, that actually we've now finally have a clear way forward. A single set of data that sets out the expectations, what's required, a set of validations that support this to ensure it can be trusted, alongside a repeatable process, all of which is key, I think, to ensuring that we can deliver something in the industry that's truly transformational. I think whilst ensuring a model that supports everyone, regardless of the size and the size of the retailer and the size of the supplier, I think we've been very keen at the very start of this that it's a model that supports and encourages everyone to be part of it. Dan mentioned that we've got obviously very large suppliers who've got systems in place to deal with data and massive amounts of data, and that is, and to be able to share that. But yes, it's about being able to take that data from the kind of larger suppliers, but certainly a key part to what we're trying to do is ensure that everybody fits into this model. And whether you're a smaller supplier who's only trying to sell one or two products, right through to someone who's selling thousands of products, it's got to be a process and a system and a way of working that kind of fits all. And I think what's kind of humbled me, I guess, and I've been involved in the start, from the very start of this really, is that it has been a truly collaborative approach, I think, across the industry to ensure that we can transform that way of working. And I think it gives us that building blocks to allow us to support the request of customers going forward in terms of the data that they want to see about the products that we're stocking.
I think it's all about innovation, right? It's laying the foundations which allow innovation to grow. Now, if we look at the challenger brands, those smaller ones that Paul mentioned, those are the guys, right? They're time poor and they're cash poor. What they need is to streamline that mandatory process of getting product information across, to free them up to allow the innovation to grow. And same with the bigger guys. It's laying that foundation which allows innovation to happen. Mm. So there's some really exciting stuff going to happen. As in China, HEMA, you can go in, you can scan a product, it'll tell you what farm it came from, when it was packed, when it was delivered to the DC, when it got into the supermarket. So it's that farm to fork, right? Just from scanning the product. Some great innovation out there that can happen, and that retailers want to work on, and brands certainly want to work on, to give it the consumer that rich information they're looking for. This is the foundation which will allow that innovation to grow. Mm.
So we've been talking about huge brands, huge retailers. What benefits are these programs going to have on the current customer experience? What's going to change? Richard, did you have a view on this?
Well, look, I mean, ultimately, we just want to ensure that shoppers have the best information possible on our brand so they can make an informed choice based on their preferences. And we just want to make it as easy as possible for our retail partners to access that information. So that is what we're trying to do. Which then ultimately benefits the consumer. For as long as the industry struggles to deal with the complexity of managing data, we'll find it difficult to provide great service to consumers. And that is something we've just got to take ownership for. But it kind of needs also to be done, as we've kind of already talked about, in a way that doesn't add cost for the industry and therefore the consumer. The great thing about programs like Product DNA is that we're able to make improvements to data availability for the consumer, also the quality of that data, because we're doing it, the process by which we do this will is trusted and we know it's independently checked, and access, all of which offers benefits to consumers. And you know, these types of solutions then have a business case which makes sense from a retailer and the manufacturer perspective, so that they minimize cost and basically ensures that the consumer benefits from those at no cost. And that's the key.
And again, so we're talking about trust and accuracy again here. So Dan, why will the consumer trust this information, do you think?
Yeah, sure. So I think in terms of why the consumer would trust it, if you look at the process, so Product DNA is built on a process that the supplier puts the information into Product DNA. They then send a sample for it to be validated. So the data that's put in is validated at an independent third-party verification center. Mm-hmm. And then it gets pushed out to retailers. So every bit of data is validated. The important part is that it's independently validated. As I mentioned earlier, GS1's a non-profit organization, right? So there's no commercialization of this data. There's no advantage for GS1. It's all about accurate and trust. And then if we look at kind of real world examples, you asked, you know, how will consumers benefit from this? I mean, if I think about it on a very simple level, the data is used for innovation, right? It's not the sexy stuff. It's the stuff that happens in the background. But if you think retailers implemented in self-service checkouts several years ago now, but even today, you get to the checkout, you scan your item, you put it in the basket, and you hear that voice that tells you the unidentified item in the basket, and you have to stand there and wait for assistance, right? So the technology's there, but it's not smooth, right? Mm-hmm. And a part of that is the weights and measurements aren't accurate. The information going into the system's not accurate, so therefore, when you put it in the basket, it doesn't think it's the product that it thinks it is, and therefore you just stood there waiting until they come and press some fancy buttons and you can move on, right? So it's not the sexy stuff, but it's the stuff that powers the sexy stuff, and you would notice if it wasn't there.
Yeah.
Right? And that's just a small example.
Yeah. So Paul, a customer wandering around Tesco's with when this project is fully implemented, how will it change their experience?
Well, I think you talked about it very early on in that the way customers shop, the ability to see products and data on the packaging, actually it's more than just what's on the packaging in a lot of cases. The packaging does hold, and there's a lot of changes gone in the past to make sure that the packaging holds all of the key information for a customer. But I guess the shopping habits of customers have changed and will continue to change in the future. I think how customers shopped even 5 years ago is different to how many shop today, with the introduction of not only in the last 5 years, but over the years of mobile and obviously online presence. I mean, the ability to react to this, but more importantly, preempt this, will help ensure customers, or we continue to deliver a shopping trip that is what our customers want. We're already seeing that enriched information can do to support our customer shopping experience in Tesco through other programs of work we've actually done and taken on in the past. I think we've started to provide additional information on the product pages on our website, for example, where customers can find out the sustainability sourcing of individual products. We've also added filters that allow customers to discover products that better suit their lifestyle and dietary needs. So it's there, it can be used, but it's not for everyone. And it's not about putting it in everybody's face, if that makes sense. It's just giving customers an opportunity, I guess, to shop in a different way, if that's the way they choose to. But I think there is a bit of a word of caution, which is we've obviously gone through a lot here and talked about data. And you say we don't want to fill people's heads too much with just data, if that makes sense. And I've got to be conscious of the fact that we don't just keep adding data for the sake of adding data to products, and whether that be in stores, whether that be on a mobile or even on the website. The information is there to support the customer shopping journey if they want to use it, if that makes sense. So I think there is a bit of a word of caution that, yes, we're talking about data, but we don't just keep adding to this data, that everything we do add, we're adding for a benefit of the customer and the customer shopping experience. And I think that's a key message, I think, that we want to take away from this as well.
So looking to the future, how can retailers and manufacturers continue to support consumers, Dan?
Yeah, so I think continuing to support consumers is about that allowing for innovation and meeting their needs. You don't know what the the next consumer demand's going to be. And I think we've touched on examples of that today. And you know, I'll keep mentioning it. It's building the foundations. I saw a conference recently, an augmented reality app, right, where you would scan the shelf and it was popping up with the kind of healthy products or unhealthy sugar content. And we know that for consumers, personalization is big. And the industry is moving more towards personalization and things like with this app, you could personalize it to say what's important to me. Like Richard and Paul have both mentioned, is it plastic? Is it sustainability? And it's going to pull up the products very easily for you that do that. So I think it's that continuous innovation, whether it be through AI, whether we're talking about the Internet of Things, all of these exciting things that are happening and we see happening in other industries. So, you know, if we look at apparel and beauty, they're definitely strides ahead. But actually, do we think that the demand is greater? Now, yeah, I mean, for a tin of baked beans, you want less information than you do if you're buying a plasma seeding screen, of course you do. But I don't think we should underestimate the desire for information. And like Paul mentioned, it's not about pushing information in the consumer's face, but it's making sure that you're ready for it and you've got it if they want it. So it's this continuous laying the foundations for me that I think will support consumers moving forward.
And Richard, you, how do you see into the integration of consumers into this this data pool?
Yeah, I mean, look, we have to continue to listen to consumers and to provide the products and solutions that meet the needs of everyday lives. You know, this might be what people want, such as a new fragrance or deodorant or a tasty meal inspiration, or what they need on health or waste or sourcing or environment, what they want to know. You know, Unilever's been very vocal on its commitments on a lot of these areas and has clear targets on some of them. Now, for example, we've signed up to the UK Plastics Pact, which a number of manufacturers and retailers have done. You know, and that commits that by 2025, all our packaging will be reusable, recyclable, or compostable. So that is something that, you know, consumers want to know and we need to communicate. You know, we've also committed to source 100% of our agricultural ingredients sustainably by 2020. But this is not something that we can dictate. You know, this is something that we have to act on and make available. And it's really down to consumers to have the choice to better look at that or not. Ultimately, as Paul said, that, you know, that consumers haven't got much time in their lives to shop, you know, so they, you know, time is important and also value is still important. So there are lots of factors which influence the way people live their lives and therefore so their shopping experience. But I guess one thing for sure, you know, through clear communication and easy accessibility of information, you know, we should, as an industry, be able to build trust in our brands and products and help the consumer make the informed choices that they want to. And, you know, as the greater the expectations of consumers in the UK, that the higher the standards we should strive for as an industry.
And Paul, what's Tesco's perspective on the future in terms of supporting consumers and listening to them? I mean, Tesco's already, I would imagine, see the consumers pretty central already. How's this going to evolve?
Well, I think, to be honest, Richard said an awful lot of, and obviously we're aligned in a lot of what you just said there, to be honest. If we listen to the customers, we won't go far wrong, I think. If we understand what they want, expect from us, and ensure we always deliver to this, I think we'll ensure, I'd always ensure, we meet the needs of the customer. I think at Tesco, we're responding to customers, indeed the whole population. I think you realise the need for sustainable packaging and working very hard with our suppliers and manufacturers to step change this. We'd not be able to manage such a change, whether it's this or whether some of the other changes we talked about, unless the product data requirements are clearly understood, I think, and are set out to an agreed standard. There's no way of being able to measure it without that, or being able to understand how well we are doing against the customer's expectations when it comes to this sort of thing. But I think going back to kind of product DNA as part of that, I think product DNA gives us a way of sharing the data. And ensures we get the data that we expect and that we can trust. A lot, we've talked a lot about the trust, and I think the trust is a key element of why now, why we're able to do or implement the change that we're talking about now in terms of product DNAs. previously methods of trying to get data and that sort of stuff have been always undertoned with the fact that can you trust the data that is coming through? And I think the measures we put in place, the agreements, the standardization, all allows us to understand that we can actually trust the data. And more importantly, if we can trust the data, obviously we can share the data with our customers. We do an awful lot to make sure we validate the data ourselves, check it and make sure it's accurate. I think this allows us and gives us the building block to do that. But yeah, I think Richard said a lot of it, to be honest, which is listening to the customers in the first instance. What is it the customers want? And also, I think I mentioned before, trying to preempt that as well. So trying to preempt it in terms of actually what could we give to customers using the data that we've got to help that shopping experience and shopping journey without pushing that in people's faces, if that makes sense. So I think Product DNA gives us that platform both now and in the future to give us the building blocks to do that.
I think also we talk about customers, right? But the other angle of this for me and the thing that infuses me about the project is that customers are people, right? And we know that a big topic now, rightfully so, is environmental sustainability. Now, it goes back again to that trust in data, that on a very basic level, if we can trust the data from a logistics point of view, which isn't a particularly sexy topic as mentioned before, right? But actually 81% of a kind of a global survey done by Nielsen, consumers said that they expect companies to improve the environment. So by improving the accuracy in weights and measurements on a very simple level, we can fit more into lorries, right? So they're actually will become more efficient through the supply chain. And FMCG compared to something like pharma is actually a lot less efficient as an industry. And therefore, if we can increase the data accuracy and we can get more product into vehicles and we can get more vehicles off the road, and then if we look at GS1 as a whole, and we work in obviously apparel and healthcare and general merchandise and other sectors, right? We can multiply that effect, then actually the long-term environmental impact of having this one way of working. And we know that brands and retailers are alike. It's part of their corporate responsibility to care about this kind of thing. So it's some of the background impacts that I think the consumers will never see the direct impact of, but actually is really powerful.
I think that's fundamental in this, that there's a shift in tone, because the food industry and retailers have been thought of as data collectors in the past. Data collectors, and what are they doing with my data? Lots of people are concerned about this. And what this project seems to be doing is it's a data sharing project. So it's morphing into the food industry giving data rather than taking it. And I know that it's a two-way track, that you're obviously you're getting data from the consumer as they buy these things as well. But there's a sort of a sea change there, isn't there? There's a change in attitude that hopefully will make the food industry feel a little bit nicer, a little bit more sharing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's collective. Right? It's people, like I said earlier, that they're usually competing, coming together for the benefit of all. I know that sounds like grandeur, right? But it's happening,
yeah,
and it's
absolutely
real, and it will have an impact. You know, from personal perspective, it's really really exciting to be part of when we're sat in a room and Unilever there, Richard's in the room and he's there with a guy who's just starting up, right? And they're both talking about the same challenges and how they can solve it together, right? And the retailer is in the room. And if you've ever seen two retailers together in the same room, it's great. They're all very careful about what they say. But it's a great thing. It's a great thing to happen, and consumers will see the end benefit of it.
Fantastic. Well, look, we look forward to all of this rolling out on a big scale and consumer benefits for it. So I think it just behoves me to say thank you so much. A lot of very important people giving up their time to discuss all of this. I think we'll bring that to a close. So Richard Sadler, Customer Director at Unilever, Dan Sands, Head of Brand Engagement at GS1 UK, and Paul Sumner, Program Manager at Tesco. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you, Stefan.
Thank you for listening to the Table Talk podcast. If you've enjoyed it, please share a review. If you like what you've heard, find out more on foodmatterslive.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook.